Morocco, Nigeria, Peru, Serbia, Thailand, the United Arab Emirates, Vietnam, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. The hacks of the activists in Jordan and Bahrain now add to two more countries to the list. The report documents how Pegasus can have a particularly egregious impact on women who are disproportionately vulnerable to the weaponization of personal information when governments seek to intimidate, harass, and publicly smear dissidents. In details, the case of Ebtissam As-Sawiq, a renowned human rights defender who works in Bahrain with the advocacy group Salam for Democracy and Human Rights. As-Sawiq's iPhone was hacked at least 8 times between August and November 2019 with Pegasus spyware, according to the researchers. The privacy violations extended what the report described as brutal harassment by Bahraini authorities. On May 26, 2017, the report said Bahrain's National Security Agency summoned As-Sawiq to Al Muharraq police station. Interrogators subjected her to verbal abuse and physically beat and sexually assaulted her. They threatened her with rape if she did not halt her human rights activism. Upon release, she was immediately taken to a hospital. The report quotes As-Sawiq as saying, "I am in a state of daily fear and terror after I was informed by frontline defenders that I was spied on. I started to be afraid of having the phone next to me, especially when I am at home among my family, my children, and my husband." Frontline Defenders forensic investigation found that As-Sawiq's phone was compromised multiple times in August 2019. On September 19, 2019 and on November 22, 2019, traces of process names linked to Pegasus were identified on her home. Amnesty International Security Lab and the Citizen Lab have both attributed these process names to NSO spyware. Another victim described in the report is Hala Ahedib, a human rights activist and member of the legal team defending the Jordan Teacher Syndicate, one of the country's largest labor unions. The Jordanian government dissolved the union in December 2020 in response to mass protests. Deep's phone was compromised by Pegasus on March 16, 2021, according to the report. Other victims mentioned in the report include Emirati activists Ala As-Siddiq, Al-Arabi journalist Rania Derdi, and Al Jazeera broadcast journalist Qada Oseis. The report calls for an immediate moratorium on the use, sale, and transfer of surveillance technologies produced by private firms until adequate human rights safeguards and regulation is in place, and a move to take serious and effective measures against surveillance technology providers like NSO Group.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. It is an honor and a pleasure to have you all with us. And of course, as always, I have the privilege of hosting my wonderful sister and awesome expert, Sister Razia Shamili. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, my full of energy friend.
Throughout these last few episodes, we've been talking about how to equip our girls with the mindset and skill set, basically, that they need in order to carry out their roles and responsibilities as adults. And the fundamental idea that we rose was that first thing first, you need to set your priorities straight and decide which route and which path you want to take on in life. Otherwise, you will constantly be in a state of grapple and conflict with yourself, trying to figure out, you know, what the heck do I want to do with myself? And then you said that, especially for those, well, actually, at this time, at this point in time and age, I think it's like this everywhere, but there's this Islamic value system, and then there's a secular value system.
There's a mixture of these
and
two.
And there's this gray little area in between where I think especially prevalent in Muslim societies where there's this mix of religion and culture. And I find that even more confusing than living in a non-Islamic country where it's like black and white, you know? Mm-hmm. But when you live in an Islamic country, you've got these all these cultures, and Muslim people have been practicing it for centuries, and then you're like, well, that doesn't make sense. And if you don't do it, you kind of get labeled as, you know, not abiding by Muslim culture. And in reality, that's all it is. It's the culture of a bunch of Muslim people who in reality has nothing to do with Islam.
And besides what you said, in the recent years, mm-hmm. maybe in the very, very recent, like maybe 2-3 years back, you have seen people, you know, taking their distance away from their culture and sticking to what they like. And people no longer care about what others think about you because this is a kind of culture in itself that very you true. Care about yourself, your desires, your joys, your peace of mind. So however you're happy with, this is the best way for you. This has become very trendy. And a lot of people no longer care about what their parents want them to do, what their society or culture wants them to do. Even in the religious city that I live in, I have seen a lot of changes. Like in past 2-3 years, you wouldn't see a lot of people trespassing the boundaries of culture. And there were certain red lines that people stuck to them. And sometimes they trespass them, but in a very careful way.
Very discreet.
Very discreet and under the skin. But these days, they're so frank. And this is like, you have a problem with it?
Yeah. Live with it.
You leave, right? I'm fine. I'm happy the way I am. I'm talking about an Islamic society where I'm living right now. I go through some Instagram pages, you know, to see how ladies in the West, of course, it's not like living in the West, but you can see the trends. And the, like when you look at the like numerous amounts of posts posted by people living in non-Islamic countries, you can get to grasp and understand a kind of
the gist
of what's going on in their life, what's important for them, what are the values for them. Like, and you see that. For instance, I know this Shia girl or this Muslim girl. It's either they have the niqab on, they have the veil on, and they are very, very careful to, you know, abide by the certain restrictions that they have in their mind. Or it's the fact that they are very, very Western. I mean, the way the colors that they choose, they call it hijabi, but it's not.
Yeah.
Let's and be so
frank.
Much makeup.
Yes.
And like the camera in
skin
your face.
Skin tight clothes.
Exactly.
Their ankle showing, their wrist showing, their neck showing.
You got it.
Yeah.
This is what I see. And is this culture?
Yeah. I'd say it's culture.
Western culture.
Yeah. Not Islamic culture, because you see it happening in Muslim countries too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is that we are affected by the culture a lot. And
sure.
These are the places where you have to draw lines, like priorities, like what do I want from my life? What does religion want from me?
Absolutely.
And the core roots of your values will have to be like certain and definite
concrete.
And determined and concrete for you. Otherwise, you would get lost.
We're going to be back after a short break, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Thank you again for joining us. We've been talking about some really interesting stuff. How to equip our girls with the mindset and skill set, basically, that they need. It's nice in theory.
Yeah.
You gotta have your core root beliefs and your doctrines and your ideology straightened out and concrete and this and that, no matter what you believe in. How do you get to that point?
Well, there is this outer surface descriptions or rulings or laws that they tell you, the three L's: loose, less attractive, and long for the hijab.
Yes.
Right? Mm. So it's kind of, you know, less attractive. So whatever makes you just shine somewhere where you go, all the eyes would get on you.
And turn heads.
Exactly. Yeah. This is, hijab is something to
conceal.
Conceal
it
your beauties.
It totally defeats the objective.
Exactly.
Of hijab.
Loose, and it wouldn't be skin tight, as you said.
Mm.
And long, it wouldn't. Your ankles, your wrists, and certain parts of your body will have to be covered. So it's very, very simple and straightforward.
Mm.
But then why do we have to do this? What is the philosophy of hijab? Then you go to the idea of haya, modesty, chastity. What is the difference between the
so
two?
It's a matter of raising awareness and increasing our knowledge.
Exactly.
Basically.
Yeah. And then knowing exactly what religion wants from
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Because the boundaries are very clear cut.
Yeah.
Right? And loose, less attractive, and long, it gives you a very good principle. It doesn't limit you. You can wear different colors, different styles, whatever. But then the principles, the values are there in your mind, and you decide. As a mature woman, you decide that. In, like me, in different societies or cultures or countries that I go, my hijab is different.
Definitely.
Right? When I'm in when I go to Saudi Arabia, I dress differently. Mm. When I'm in Iran, I dress differently. When I go to Canada, I dress differently. If I go to the UK, I dress. If I go to in the mosque of the UK, but there are some limitations. There are some borderlines that I would have to observe.
Oh, you can't
them.
Compromise. On
exactly.
Them.
These
yeah.
are not compromisable. But then there are some gray areas that you can pick. You can choose which is based on the three L's and the value system that you have. What is haya? What is this? You can decide what you have to do. It's quite clear.
It's safe for us to say that one of the most important and crucial things we need to do in order to be able to abide to the value system that we've chosen, i.e. Islamic value system, is to increase our knowledge about what that value system actually is and what it demands of us. Because oftentimes, especially a lot of like second or third generation immigrants that live in Western countries, and even some of our revert sisters, they don't know, you know? It's something that they see so often, and it's become such a norm to them that they don't know it's unlawful for your little ankle to show, or when you pull your sleeves up for your arms to show.
Or when you wear nail polish. There are certain shared rulings in Shia and Sunni. But sometimes it's the matter of difference of different sects, right? So whether you're Shia or Sunni, but most of the things are shared, right?
Definitely.
So we're going to have a different session talking about how to instill these qualities in our children. One of them was to raise your awareness.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about an adult or a revert, right? That you need to study about Islam, about the Islamic teachings, and the wisdom or the hikmah behind some of the rulings. What are the teachings of Islam? Now, we want to go delve into the topic a little bit and explain about what Islam wants from us and what are the measures that we can take as ladies of the home to instill this value within ourselves and our family. Mm. So this is the question that we want to answer today, one of the questions.
Okay.
Well, when you look at our main reference, which is the Quran, there are so many beautiful verses that highlight the importance of modesty in a woman's life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have talked about just simply putting on a veil on your head is not called hijab. You have the modesty or the haya of the eyes. You have the modesty or haya of walking.
The speech, of the behavior, how you carry yourself.
Exactly. We have the case of it gives us specific instances. The daughter of Prophet Shu'aib, and when they were Prophet Musa was following them to go to the, when they wanted to thank him because he helped the girls water the cattle. So they wanted to thank him and they took him to their father. And if it's these days, we chit-chat, so how is it going with you? So what are you studying? What are you doing? Oh, it's so nice to catch up and everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then what did they do? They talked the minimum with him as he was a non-mahram.
Mm-hmm.
And also, she walked behind him
mm-hmm.
so that he wouldn't see the shape of her body. He wouldn't get attracted to her. And even when he saw her, she walked in a way that the Quran describes her that tamshi al-istihya.
Mm-hmm.
She walked in a manner
modesty.
Of modesty. That's so beautiful.
It is.
Or there are the verses about the hijab, which is not the topic for today. But I'm just trying to say that the Quran attracts our attention to the topic of haya and not hijab. So if it's nowadays and we're going with a guy, we're taking him somewhere to our home, we start chit-chatting on the way, like, how's work with you? What do you do? What do you study? Oh, it's so nice to see you, right? But this is the manner that the daughter of Shu'aib...
No, if we're a complete stranger.
Yeah, but we say you have to be sociable. And it's actually a quality in the Western and the secular value system. Just sitting there and looking at each other, they say, oh, she's antisocial.
Mm. But times, I think, with the dawn of, I think, the internet, which has given a platform to a lot of introverts and socially awkward individuals to have a platform and to have a voice and to express themselves, it has come with a great extent of training, and I don't enjoy it. You know?
To talk to people.
Yeah. Social people enjoy socializing.
Yeah.
I do it out of, you know, basic courtesy.
Yeah.
Thank you to Sister Razia for this interesting discourse. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger, to Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men. and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here is a brilliant description of the Holy Quran by Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her. The last and most comprehensive heavenly scripture that God Almighty revealed to her father, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, for guidance of mankind. A covenant he brought unto you, and an heir he left to guard you. That is the eloquent book of Allah, the truthful Quran. The brilliant light, the shining beam. Its insights are indisputable. Its secrets are revealed. Its indications are manifest. And its followers are blessed by it.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
Now, with the Chinese New Year approaching, a Vietnamese artist is honoring the zodiac sign of 2022 by making different objects that look like tigers.
I often introduce collections for the zodiac animal of the next year. It's going to be the year of the tiger soon. There are 2022 carvings in this collection, which align with the number of this year. Also, I am very fond of tigers as an animal, as they are so powerful, yet so majestic.
Tam Pat has his workshop in a village on the outskirts of the capital, Hanoi. The 39-year-old artist makes tigers using wood from jackfruit trees, which Vietnamese often use to make spiritual items. He applies crushed eggshells and seashells to give shape to the tiger's stripes. The artist is also carving some tigers purely out of laterite, the mineral still used in some villages to build homes. It takes Tampat about 2 weeks to come up with a tiger-looking object. This year, he is trying to make his creations in a way that can be used in everyday life. The house in Colombia has become a hotspot for tourists. It's built in a unique way, and if you want to enter the house, you have to first walk on the ceiling leading to the door. The upside-down house is named Casa Loca and is located in Guatavita, a short distance from the capital, Bogota. Tourists can be seen walking around taking pictures of this exceptional structure. Many say it fills them with joy to visit such places. Some tourists say this has provided them a chance to gain some relief from the struggles of the pandemic.
We've come from a pandemic. We've emerged from a lockdown. So this helps people have a moment of relaxation with a novelty that we did not have. You have fun while snapping photos. It puts your mind at ease.
The Austrian creator of Casa Loca says he first got the idea to build a house when he was visiting a similar place in his country back in 2015. He says his grandchildren were stunned by the creation, and that's why he decided to make an upside-down house in Colombia, where he lives now. He says people initially thought he was mad, but he decided to accomplish his plan anyway. The pandemic slowed him down a bit, but he proudly inaugurated the place 3 weeks ago.
Iran has won the first title in team category of the 20th Pan Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championship. Saman Kujuri has more.
Talented Iranian children have ranked first in team category of the 20th Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships, which was held online. Children in five different age groups, including age 5 to 7 as Group A, 8 to 9 Group B, 10 to 11 Group C, 12 to 14 Group D, and 15 or older in Group E, annually attend the contest solving multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, cube root, fractions, time, and etc. 572 students from 21 member states participated at the event.
This year, Iranian students have won the title of Champion of the Champions in two categories. Moreover, they won titles in all categories, including Champion of Champions titles, Champion titles, First Winners, and the Second Winner titles. In 2023, Iran will host the 22nd edition of the Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships.
The Smart Kids Institute holds a national competition annually in August to select members of the Iranian team for attending the PAMA Global Abacus Championships. Children from 17 to 13 years of age take part in the competition to solve some 7 mathematical test sheets using abacuses.
I am 12 years old. I have won the first title in this round of the international competitions. I have been practicing with abacus for 4 years. In the competitions, we had to solve multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, and etc.
My math teacher encouraged me to learn abacus 5 years ago. Abacus and mental arithmetic skills had great impact on my mental growth and helped me a lot in my math lessons.
The championship, organized by a non-profit organization established in 1999, is an example of what can be achieved with early intervention in abacus math and mental arithmetic education.
The purpose of the competition is to allow for observation of mental arithmetic skills from countries around the world and to promote related education to find new talents in this field. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Traveling around the world is a wish a lot of people have, but never actually get the chance. However, the Belgian-British girl has achieved that feat at only 19. Zora Rutherford flew back home on Thursday to a crowd made up of family members, friends, fans, and journalists. She completed her odyssey after just over 5 months, traveling over 52,000 kilometers. Zara is the youngest female in the world to fly around the globe. She achieved this using a microlight aircraft, which weighs only 325 kilograms and has very low fuel consumptions. That's absolutely amazing. Let's take a listen.
Right, the plane obviously is a bad for the environment. I'm not trying to claim that it is. But I have chosen one of the best aircraft to do it with. The fuel consumption is amazing. For this whole trip, it's used the same amount of fuel as a Boeing uses in about 10 minutes for the whole trip around the world, which I think puts things into perspective. Obviously, it is bad, but I'm really trying to minimize my impact as much as possible.
Zora says the scariest part of her trip was flying over the frozen expanse of Siberia, a place with no human habitation close by. The teen adventurer also had to deal with different countries' health restrictions. Zara had to take multiple PCR tests on her journey, while China's COVID-related regulations meant she could not use the country's airspace. Now, Zara says she is glad she can stay in one place for a few months. Who knows what her next adventure will be?
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trendy news, and more from every corner of the world.
In the world of art, a Japanese artist named Sachi is creating incredibly realistic felted wool portraits of cats. Sachi calls her artworks Wakuneko, which directly translates to frame cat. Her work is highly popular, and she has more than 600,000 followers on different social media platforms. Each portrait takes a whopping 1 month to complete. The crafting process starts with Sachi looking at dozens of photos of the cat she wants to replicate. Then she prepares the required materials before preparing the foundation and mounts the felt onto it. The most difficult part of the job is making the subject's eyes. According to Sachi, it is also the most special stage.
I think that the moment when the cat's spirit enters into the artwork can be presented through the eyes. In that sense, I have been very particular about how to make the eyes.
Sachi's portraits have inspired people around the world to adopt homeless cats. Now she hopes to hold an exhibition showing various cats, including ones with physical handicaps, in order to inspire more adoptions of shelter cats.
Disability is not an obstacle to success. A group of Japanese with disabilities has proved it as they create incredible handicraft and make a living this way. A shop called Amayaka offers the items made by these disabled individuals. Located in a Tokyo neighborhood, it showcases products ranging from scarves and bags to glassware and colorful carts. Mayaka and all other workshops are part of a new movement aimed at promoting works of people with impairment. In just one of the workshops cooperating with Mayaka, about 20 disabled people are working over there. However, organizers of the movement say these people are still invisible in the society and are not paid fairly for their works despite being experienced in craftsmanship.
Some workers here have a career of more than 30 years. They have been weaving since their school days. They are so experienced that we should refer to them as artisans.
The organizers say they hope that their initiative will promote the works of the people with disabilities and help the society to start thinking about the way disabled workers are being treated. Turtles get a second chance to spread their fins after being found with bellies full of plastic. They were rescued and are now being released back to the sea in Argentina. Two green turtles and four loggerhead turtles were saved from fishing nets in Buenos Aires province. The group was taken to Grupo Marina Foundation, where they recuperated after purging 10 types of plastic from their bodies. Rehabilitation of the turtles lasted over a month and included blood tests and other procedures to make sure they were free of plastic. A biologist with the foundation says the danger of plastic is that it's silent and usually its dangers are so gradual that it goes unnoticed.
Many times the animal appears to be in perfect health. However, during the checkup and evaluation, we found a large amount of this material inside. So it is important to get rid of the plastic before the condition worsens and it ends up causing the deaths of the specimens.
The turtles had mistakenly eaten plastic, thinking it was food. Wind, waves, and sunshine break down discarded plastic into tiny pieces, which litter ocean waters. Much of this plastic waste can be found on beds of seaweed that turtles forage for food. This trash ends up fatally clogging their bellies, causing the decline in the population of this graceful reptile. The Indian-administered Kashmir has the world's only floating post office, a 200-year-old houseboat on a famous Dal Lake in Srinagar. Set up during the British rule in India, the post office has survived throughout the years because of its charm. Our correspondent Shahana Bhatt has more.
The Indian-administered Kashmir was once a princely independent state, out of bounds for outsiders. As the ruler of Jammu and Kashmir disallowed non-locals to own property in this picturesque region. During the British rule in the Indian subcontinent, many Britons tried to find an alternative way of living in Kashmir. Thus, houseboat on the world-famous Dal Lake came into existence. Today, the lake is a home to hundreds of such boats, which are a major attraction for tourists around the globe. This one is a unique boat, the only floating post office in the whole world. This is a 200-year-old boat built by the British. It has truly stood the test of time as it still functions.
Post office, Dal Lake.
This is not an ordinary post office. We're standing on a heritage property. I've enjoyed my work since the very first day I came here. It's a unique experience to be working here. And every day, I get the chance to meet people from different corners of the world.
The boat is not limited to postal services. It also has a small museum where colorful stamps from the 1980s are put to display, along with a collection of rare Philately stamps. The post office is a hot tourist destination in the region. Locals also come to this post office to send postcards to their loved ones, inviting them to visit Kashmir.
Floating post office.
In the age of technology, electronic mail, e-cards and other internet applications have made it extremely easy for people to communicate. But sending a postcard from this floating post office gives one a really different feeling.
The floating post office underwent reconstruction in 2011 and is currently a part of the Indian postal system. Recently, the office started offering banking services, thus attracting more locals.
I have opened an account here for my daughter. It's hassle-free and this place suits my mind. It's not like the usual offices. Visiting this place with kids is like a trip.
Yet another attraction of this post office is this souvenir shop from where everyone can buy postcards, stamps, traditional crafts and greeting cards.
This floating post office in Kashmir's Dal Lake is like a time machine. It brings people back to two centuries ago and shows them the history of the beautiful region. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
Now let's go to Germany to hear the heartwarming story of how technology is turning a young boy's life around. 7-year-old Joshua has a severe lung disease which has made him unable to go to school. But now he can attend his classes from home with the help of an avatar robot. The device sits in Joshua's Berlin classroom, enabling him to listen to the classroom in real time to what his teacher and classmates are saying. Joshua can even interact with everyone else by making the robot display a blinking signal.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Rabbitu billahi rabba wa bil islam dina.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In the name of Allah, the Almighty. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum. Peace and salutations of Allah be upon all of you, dear friends. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, and this program today is special. We're going to speak about consultation in Islam. Today, Wednesday, is the 23rd of Jamadi al-Thani, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 6th of Bahman, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 26th of January, 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Let's open the Holy Quran. We'll listen to chapter Shura, verse 38.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. والذين استجابوا لربهم وأقاموا الصلاة وأمرهم شورى بينهم ومما رزقناهم ينفقون.
And those who have responded to their Lord and established prayer, and whose affair is determined by consultation among themselves, and from what we have provided them, they spend.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
This verse lays emphasis on consultation in the administration of society, hence the designation of the chapter Shura, consultation. In a hadith we read, consult with those who are truthful and have no attachments. Reveal your secrets unto them so that they may present their comprehensive and complete opinions. Consultation with the benevolent wise leads to growth and divine blessing. Regarding your affairs, consult with one who possesses five excellences: sensibility, knowledge, experience, benevolence, and fear of Allah Almighty.
You could easily take away everything you've given me, and I try to remember not to take anything for granted, 'cause I know that one day suddenly this will all come to an end. So my last wish is for you.
This is today's special from IRIB English Radio. Our topic is consultation in Islam. There is no doubt on importance of consultation in Islam. Those who enjoy intellectual and social growth consult with others. The faithful never enter a work unless they consult, and this characteristics indicates their vigilance in affairs. The great exegete of the Holy Quran, Allama Tabatabai, may Allah keep his soul in peace, referring to Ayah 38 of Surah Shura, which says, and their affairs are by counsel among themselves, reminds that the faithful are the people with grown minds, and they refer to people of intellect for making proper decision. And as a result, the Holy Ayah's meaning is close to Ayah 18 of chapter Zumar, which says, who listen to the word and follow the best of it. Dr.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bin asta'in. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with the role and effect of consultation in Islam. In the life and times of the infallible Imams, we find that, for example, the seventh infallible Imam, Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam, wanted to receive the consultation and suggestions of his own colored servant. And that colored servant knew well that, I mean, he was the seventh infallible Imam, and he was the embodiment of all God-given and God-granted knowledge. So he said, well, I'm not in such a position to suggest anything to you. You are the most learned of all people right now. He said, no. Sometimes the right word may be pronounced by you. I mean, the right word may come out of your mind. So I want to have your consultation. We find this training that if someone doesn't receive consultations of other people, other figures, or other personalities, it may later on, little by little, gradually, it may take, a person to a sense of, to developing a sense of arrogance, a sense of being both arrogant and ignorant at the same time. Ignorant because, this person hasn't received, suggestions of others. Arrogant because he doesn't want to receive such suggestions and, consultation and so on. This one is because we have to train ourselves, not to behave selfishly, not to behave snobbishly. And at the same time, in the Holy Quran, it's indicated that, this consultation was really a practice of great sages in the world, and on top of them, the divinely dispatched prophets, such as, for example, the prophet Abraham, who was, really a great divine prophet.
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, hadiths of the infallibles, lessons from the life of the infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
The right of him who seeks your counsel. Imam Sajjad states, and the right of him who seeks your counsel is that you should give him your counsel as much as you think he can bear. And you should talk with him with such gentle words that he listens to you, and you should use such words that his intellect can understand. This is because for each person's intellect there is a certain way of talking that he can comprehend and respond to. You should choose having mercy as your course of action, and there is no power but in Allah. In short, Imam Sajjad states that one who seeks counsel has the right to be advised as much as he can bear to hear. Advice should be given gently to help the listener accept it. One should also be kind when giving someone some advice. Giving counsel and wishing well are among the important topics stressed in Islam. The Quran has stressed that the divine prophets are social counselors.
I see you in the wings that chase the night, circling the warmth of candlelight. I hear you in the wind as the two poles spin, whispering the truth your heart holds in. I feel you in the chill as the seasons turn, laying down a seed with its lessons learned. The circle spins a perfect line, free from borders, free from time. I close my eyes and clear my mind. The circle joins your love with mine.
Imam Ali's Viewpoints on Consular. This is the title of this part. Once Abdullah ibn Abbas sought Imam Ali's advice and was in disagreement with the advice given to him by the commander of the faithful. Imam Ali said, "It is up to you to give me your advice. But whenever my advice is in disagreement with what you think, you must obey me." In another tradition, we read, Ali ibn Mahziyar narrated that Imam Baqir wrote him a letter and asked him to tell so-and-so to consult with him, but choose to do what they themselves think is best to do, since they are better aware of the conditions of their own town. This is because consultation is blessed, and Allah has ordered the Prophet in the Holy Quran to consult with the people, but make a decision himself as to what is best to do and rely on Allah after he makes up his mind. Then if what the advisor says is correct, you can benefit from his advice. And if it is not correct, you can hope to guide him in the straight path with Allah's will. When it is said, seek their advice in the first, it is meant seek the good.
One of the areas that there is no shura, God is not going to consult the people regarding that matter, is the concept of what? Imamah and Khilafah. Because someone tells me that for a country in Islam, do you want God to appoint the president? No, God doesn't appoint the president. God says, you people, you decide. This is a small office, limited office. We are speaking about Imamah and Khilafah, which is universal, not regional or local, universal. إِنِّي جَعِلُكَ لِلنَّاسِ إِمَامًا, for mankind, not just for this country or that country. Here, the difference between the two schools, the school of Ahlul Bayt and the school of the companions, is that we believe that this office is not opened for shura or consultation. And this is exactly what the greatest scholars of Sunnis acknowledge. I read for you what Al-Imam al-Razi. Razi is the greatest ever Sunni scholar, mufassir of the Quran, exegist on the Quran, the Razi. Tafsir al-Razi is the greatest. He says in his book, he says, when God sent a text and he says, you have to do this, we cannot contest that or counter it with our own opinion, with our own ijtihad. Ijtihad means juristic reasoning, the reason of the jury, the reason of someone who's expert. You cannot counter it because there is text there. God says, I am telling you to do this. You can't come and say, let's open it for consult. I have given you the answer. My answer is very plain, very clear. You have to do this. So you can't open it for discussion. And one of these areas is the area of Khilafah and Imam. Where is the evidence? Some people are going to ask you about the evidence. Where is the evidence that the Imam has to be appointed by God, or the caliph has to be appointed by God, and there is no room for consultation or shura? The evidence is in the Quran, in chapter Surah Al-Qasas, chapter 28, verse 68. وَرَبُّكَ, listen to this, وَرَبُّكَ, your Lord, يَخْلُقُ, creates, يَخْلُقُ مَا يَشَاء, whatever he likes, وربك يخلق ما يشاء ويختار, and he chooses for leadership. Our imams, the imams of Ahlul Bayt, Imam al-Baqir and al-Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam, they say the term choose means for leadership, for imam.
Dear brothers and sisters, that was all for today's special from IRIB English Radio. Inshallah, we join you in another episode. Till then, we leave you in Allah's blessings. Have a nice time.
They told me that I'm crazy, who you're praying for. They told me there is nothing, who you're looking for. Stop doing what you're doing, cause there is no hope. Just come with me, I'll show you what's behind your door. And they showed me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes, I was mesmerized. But deep inside I know that there's a better world. Cause I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up,